believe it was 1987, in which there was a limitation as to the use of party names or any portions of party names by non-party or candidates seeking access to the ballot through the nominating petition process. Frankly, we can understand the consternation of candidates who find that perhaps other candidates are manipulating this purpose so that they can bypass the primary election or for whatever purpose. One of the concerns is, and I think it was raised in House Judiciary, as I recall, is that there are constitutional provisions that people can identify themselves in any manner they choose. And one of the restricting provisions of that bill, as I recall, is that any word used by another party could not be used by another individual. Words like Alaskan could never be used by a second group that wanted to call themselves the Alaskan something. The could not be used. The constitutionality of such a provision limiting the use of a title or a name, I think, was the major concern of the House Judiciary Committee, that it would never withstand a court review. And so coming up with wording that solves the problem without endangering the constitutional rights of independent party candidates is a significant one.
Senator Killings,
I've been told that there is language that is acceptable. It doesn't endanger the constitutional right. And if, in fact, it does, let them take it to court. But the burden's on them, not on the parties. The parties were there first.
Senator Fix.
Yeah. Linda, if the language, it seemed to me then what you're saying is Senator Halpert's language was very broad and generic. What if the language was very narrow in scope and saying that a person cannot use any the name that has been certified by the Division of Elections as an authorizing party or as a regular party in the state of Alaska? So that would be Libertarian or Independent, I guess, right? Is that where it got into because of the Independent Party? I just wanted to restrict Republican, Democrat, Libertarian, the use of those three words. But apparently the wording is more broadly defined as previously put in that bill.
There was another application that we raised issue in committee hearings that we just brought to the committee's attention, and that is that often there are national parties, lesser-known parties, that then seek ballot access for president and vice president as limited political parties in the state of Alaska. And those names of those parties are recognized in many other jurisdictions. Their candidates are appearing on many states' ballots. And there would also be a problem with determining whether those parties and any words used in relationship to those parties would restrict an Alaskan independent party from using a word or name.
Senator Kelly, we're off teleconference now. Yeah.
Mr. Chairman, I mean, we're getting a little off base here. You know, if we put it in statute, then somebody else has got to take it to court. We had a situation last time where the Republican Party had to spend $12,000 to take it to court. We can do pretty much what we want. If somebody thinks it's a constitutional problem, fine, let them sue. But what parties are recognized by the State Division of Election as political parties, not limited or any of that, but as political parties?
Mr. Chairman, it changes from year to year. This year, in 1986, it was the Republican Party, Democratic Party, and Libertarian Party. In that year, their gubernatorial candidate for the Libertarian Party failed to receive the 3% of the votes cast, and therefore they lost their recognized political party status. However, the Alaskan Independence Party did regain recognized political party status.
Okay, and what is that? What are they called? What is the group called? Those three, what do you call them as a group?
Political parties, as defined in the statute.
Okay, so what's wrong with you cannot use any name of a political party as defined in the statutes? If somebody has a problem with that, let them sue.
Wonder if you had a national party that, like the Democratic Socialist Party, which is a party in other countries, and I mean, you still have.
They can't
some
use it in Alaska unless it wants to.
Well, I think one of the things that we can pursue on this is to the committee will pursue this and get some legal findings, and we'll go dig out the old Halpert bill. But then there's another question that I see is a little bit different, and that's the question of petitioning for ballot.
How did all these people get on the ballot after the primary election? I mean, come on, where's that coming from?
Mr. Chairman, as a national concern, there has been a great movement toward reducing the restrictions to ballot access for independent parties. As a result of those provisions, and as a result of our rejection of petitions this year by candidates who had failed to provide a sufficient number of signatures, failed to provide any paperwork at all, those applications were rejected. Those candidates filed suit on a number of issues in Sigler versus State of Alaska. Those issues were, number one, that requiring a June 1st filing deadline for candidates who weren't expected to appear on the ballot till the general election was restrictive of their right to file for office in response to public sentiment based on the candidates in the primary election or the outcome of the candidates in the primary election. There have been other jurisdictions, and in Sigler, the court ruled in their favor that the June 1st filing deadline was an undue burden on a candidate who did not appear on the ballot until November. At the moment, the Title 15 has absolutely no deadline in statute for independent or non-party candidates, none whatsoever. We have appealed that. The Attorney General's Office has appealed that to the Supreme Court. And we don't know what the outcome of that decision will be.
So we need a deadline.
Or another way, could we say all candidates must appear on the primary ballot?
There are a number of options to resolve this problem. Absolutely.
Let's go with the deadline first.
Mr. Chairman, we had proposed a governor's bill that would establish a deadline. Our concern was that pending a Supreme Court decision, which might be some time down the trail, we thought we should try for a deadline, and then if the Supreme Court ruled in a manner that the deadline selected was not necessary or was incorrect, change it.
If I might just, don't we have experience in other states on third-party candidate deadlines?
Those candidate deadlines through the court decisions in those jurisdictions have moved the filing deadline for nomination candidates much, much later in the process.
I mean later than the primary, like an August primary?
After the primary in many, many cases. That's correct.
But we have one of the latest primaries.
Yeah, that's our bigger problem.
That's our problem.
Mr. Turner, but it doesn't really, but what the court will be ruling on is not a statute that says there's a deadline, but in a vacuum, they'll be making a ruling, correct? If there's a statute that says there's a deadline, that might be an entirely different ruling than them trying to decide in a vacuum of a statute.
Senator, I don't know, understand the legal technicalities in terms of lawsuits, but so I can't answer that.
Oh, the deadline, see what the court's doing.
The other thing, rule up.
We do know that the deadline was struck down in the Superior Court, and the court, as I recall, and based on my limited interpretation skills in terms of legal issues, it appeared that they were leaning toward a deadline substantially later and potentially after the primary election.
Well, it's been my experience that there's all kinds of decisions all over the states based on different types of election laws, and I don't think we ought to worry too much about that.
We'll pursue that too, and also maybe we can get some input from the Attorney General's office. I'm sure that they have done some research on some of these cases. Usually, my guess is it's like residency. There's this window, you know, there's this
acceptability.
1 to 2 years, or they probably don't say September 15th or October 1. So maybe we can try to get a feel for what that range is and see if there is a deadline that we can, you know, work towards that would be, that we could feel prudent about. Did you have any other specific suggestions for us in this, for our deliberations on statute changes?
At the request of an aide, we had responded to two areas. Number one that we think would be helpful is there is nothing that requires when someone files a declaration of candidacy for them to give a residence address or their length of residency at that address or in that district. We would like to see that added to the declaration of candidacy provisions to provide us information that would be helpful in determining their eligibility. The second has to do...
Excuse me if I can stop you, but it is on the forms now.
We have put it on the form, but there's nothing requiring it to be there. All it asks is, all that's required in the declaration of candidacy is the mailing address under the current statute.
Say residence address and how long you've been here.
Keep the carpet baggers out of your district, Pat.
That issue comes up quite frequently as candidates file declarations of candidacy. There are a number of challenges, and of course there's a whole statutory provision that we are to investigate challenges. As a personal observation and not necessarily an official one, it appears that any lawsuits regarding those determinations has only been postponed 30 days from initiating them. So it has caused difficulty. We had testified at the time that bill was passed that the provision for requiring the Division of Elections to investigate or rule on certain of those determinations only put us in a position of having to evaluate evidence and rule on evidence, which is not within our authority to do so from a legal standpoint. We found that during the various challenges raised this year with regard to various candidates' eligibility, above and beyond the normal procedures we take, we ended up getting affidavits and various evidence provided to us, and then to the best of our ability, we made a recommendation and sought legal counsel from the Department of Law. I'm not sure that it was an adequate way for those final determinations to be made. Have two sides swearing in to this and attesting to that and providing utility records on this side and other statements saying that they know that this person really, the day before they filed for office, was not sleeping at their permanent abode but sleeping across the district line, and it's almost untenable. So with that in mind, it would be helpful if we at least had on the declaration of candidacy a sworn statement as to the duration of the candidate's residence in a specific location.
Are you saying that there's two different standards of residency? One is this presumption of residency in a voter, if you're a candidate, that you don't have a presumption of residency?
That's an interesting question, Senator. I don't know that I can adequately address it. I hadn't thought of it that way. One of the things that is provided in the statute on eligibility of a candidate under the new provisions is that there is that we are not allowed to, we may not certify a candidate's eligibility if they have at any time been registered in the previous 12-month period prior to filing in any other district. And we have had those circumstances without clear and convincing evidence that their residency, even though they may have not changed their address within the last 12 months, that they have can provide documentation that supports at least their residency in the district for that period.
So the answer to your question is no, we don't have any presumptive residency.
No, it's different.
It's different.
Yeah. You've got to provide utility bills.
Have you had a general feel about when the special election might be? What is the time frame?
We feel comfortable that on barring now this new motion for reconsideration filed that we understand, we have not seen it. We have not been able to confirm that it has been filed prior to this hearing, but we understand that Mr. Bradley has filed a motion for reconsideration. I have no idea if that is true, number one, and number two, if that would impact the selected date of the election. The Lieutenant Governor has announced that we are targeting that election for April 4th.
Mr. Chairman, I think it would be a lot easier to make the passage of the bill much more certain and expeditious if we put an effective date after the date of the special election. Nobody even would worry about or look at this bill as potentially affecting this particular election.
Just put a July 1 effective date.
Could you guys live with July 1?
Yes.
The only thing on July 1 I'd want to check is this 54 or 40 day provision, because I'm not sure when the 48 day or 54 days before the. Oh, we don't have a primary.
Well, I don't put any effective date on it, and then it's 90 days after the governor's signature. You can do it that way, too.
Yeah. But I think your point's a good one, and it's certainly doable.
There's no way this bill is going to affect this election. We don't work that fast, for one thing.
Not if we put an effective date on it. And then nobody will try to maneuver on it to a potentially affect this election.
Mr. Chairman, if I might, just one more thing at the request of an aide. Another issue that has made itself evident over the last couple of years are is the whole issue that is totally gray in the statutory scheme of candidates who amend or seek to amend their candidacy filings on the final day of deadline. Whether it's a candidate who seeks to change vital information relative to the candidacy for the same seat, a candidate who seeks to withdraw candidacy for the purposes of refiling a new one for a different seat or for any other purpose. We might suggest that to alleviate that, there might be a possibility of, by statute, indicating a term of a certain select number of days prior to the actual filing deadline, that the information provided on a declaration of candidacy withdrawal for the purpose of subsequent refiling cannot happen if there's already been something on file within a certain number of days prior to the filing deadline.
I don't like that. We all know what we're talking about. We had one instance in, the 12 years I've been around. And
it makes me nervous, too, to tamper with that. And I'd have to say that that doesn't seem to cut politically one way or another. Anybody
could
change
it anyway.
At any time. I know. I guess maybe this is a little anecdotal, but for some of us who hang around election the election office on June 1st, frankly, some of this is more humorous than serious. Maybe it is a very serious matter for a few people, and different parties can feel like they lost a candidate, but. And the opportunity exists there for anybody to do anything up until the closing of the office that day. And it seems like there are, just as in war, there's defensive mechanisms that can be employed also in those regards. And I don't know. Do you see that as somehow seriously interfering with a proper election process or some way disadvantaging any particular group or party or interest or candidate?
Senator, we feel that we responded to a request for, is there a solution to this problem? It was evident to us that some people took it very seriously during this last election, of course. On the other hand, we feel that this is a legislative option here, the intent of the legislature on this matter, so we really have no comment to make. We were asked to provide a suggestion, is there a solution? We felt that that might be one. That once filed, no amendments can be made or withdrawal and subsequent refiling in the last few days before the election.
That doesn't allow a person who makes a decision early to change the moment.
Chickens out at the last moment.
Well, it would still allow them to withdraw.
You withdraw. You're just saying not change to another. Well, of course, that would involve changing to another seat, too.
Mm-hmm. And so it would also, someone who filed early, and we already have people filed for 1990, I think we even have one candidate. Filed for 1992. So, yes, people do file very early. As a technical amendment, we might want to encourage the committee to look at the oath that's required for the candidate to take on the declaration of candidacy, which is difficult to administer because of the fact that people file very early and many things can happen in the interim which would cause legitimate reasons for someone to want to withdraw and refile, or the candidate moves and is no longer eligible but still wants to run for office. And that's the oath that says, I certify that I have not filed a declaration for any other seat in this election, and I have not filed any other declaration or petition for this seat, which, if taken absolutely literally, means that once filed, you are either on the ballot for that particular seat or you are off the ballot because you withdrawn, period. And I would encourage the committee to at least look at that oath, which is required as part of the declaration of candidacy, and determine if that's the real intent of the legislature to be so absolute about those issues.
Well, but this is complicated, and I think one reason why I had to file for 1990 and file last year for 1990 is in the process of raising campaign funds. You cannot raise campaign funds unless you're, as an APOC regulation, unless you're a declared candidate.
Or letter of intent.
Or letter of intent, right. So then you get into that whole situation, and you have to file your letter of intent early. So if we're going to correct one thing or look at it one thing, you have to look at the whole picture. Because I think it's APOC that drives those early declarations.
Absolutely.
Other comments? If not, we sure appreciate your testimony and your preparation today. This has been very educational, even for some of us who have been through this process a few times.
Senator, it's always a pleasure, and we have been very, very fortunate. We feel that we have had wonderful support from the legislature. We have solved a good many problems over the last few years, and we have appreciated the opportunity, both on the House and the Senate, to participate in a process that hopefully improves the code, not only from a statutory basis, but also helping us administer the process as efficiently as we can. We appreciate the opportunity.
For members of the committee, it would be my suggestion here that we, on a staff level, pursue some of these items that were mentioned today, particularly those I would make some determination that they could be non-controversial or that we could reach agreement on, and check some of the other people out on it, like the AG's office, and we need to do, I think, some checking.
Okay, don't do that. We'll never get them.
And then bring those back before the committee at a date soon. And if either of you have specific suggestions or more recommendations, feel free to submit them or get them to me.
Mr. Chair, just one observation: how the high esteem the Division of Elections has held. I think it is held in very high esteem. It is considered a very fair, very ethical agency. And the relationship between that and some of the controversy surrounding APOC, I think, is astounding.
Interesting observation. Nothing else? State Affairs adjourned. Well, I can never